I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Now, I need you all for a project. James Jeffries, a friend of Robert's, is sponsoring Dumpty Dum. He is very nearly as clever as Robert and... actually, slightly more creative. He builds prototypes for the web and does some amazing things with data for arts and culture. In fact, I may ask him to work on the Village website if I can loosen Jennifer's grip on the thing. He's worked with all the best people, you know. The BBC Research and Development team, creating interactive story explorers for Homefront and Peaky Blinders. For the London Philharmonic Orchestra, creating a prototype of a searchable archive of their historic performances. Once, he even built some tweeting receipt printers for a Bill Drummond exhibition. Now, that's the kind of innovation we need for the Village show. So if you'd like to talk to him about your project idea, you could get in touch with him at Robert, what's his email address? James@shedcode.co.uk. That's James@shedcode.co.uk. Or you could have a browse of his website, shedcode.co.uk. Do tell him I was looking for him if you see him, won't you? I want him to design me a digital resurgence stone.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the rogue Christmas card that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the treacherous bookcase that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our busted ankle, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from the Dumpty Dum meetup posse who met at the Tyneside Bar Cafe in Newcastle. And They were all in fine voice. And if you go onto our Facebook page... guess what, Lucy?
What?
You can see him sing it. It is a video.
That's very good. That's a step forward, isn't it?
It is. But you know what? They're little tinkers. Proper little tinkers. Because there was a little tweet going out at about quarter past six when they were supposed to be? 15 minutes after they were supposed to have met.
Oh, yeah. It was just that one lady by herself.
Yeah. And it's a big sign saying, "Where are you?" And then 5 minutes, then I retweeted it going, "Oh my God," I panicked, Luce, I proper panicked. I was like, "Oh my God, we can't have this go down in Dumpty Dum annals as being a meetup which no one attended." And then it was like, pranked us. 5 minutes later, look, here we are, yee-hee. And they had 8 in total at the very end. And they were very lovely and very Dumpty Dum-like. And it seemed like good fun was had by all.
Excellent.
But Lucy, if somebody would like to send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction or be startled by someone emerging from a culvert after 18 months, ring us on 02-03-03-1-C-105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Shedcode for sponsoring us, and to Derek for the Only Back Bedroom. Get well soon, Derek. He's got an operation this week on his torn scrotum. The doctor asked him if he wanted it done privately, and he said no, he'd just whop it out on the green like he normally does.
Oh, you and your Derek jokes. Well done. On this week's episode, we have calls from Claire, who thinks Roy is going to play daddy. Hope not. Yokel Bear, who's fearing fighty. Claire, who thinks we need to ask Toby the Brighton question. Glyn, who's suspicious of Brian. I'm kind of with you there, Glyn. Robert, who's Lucy's favourite slightly drunk fantasist. Debs, who wants to push Rob over the edge. You might have to get in the queue there, Debs. And Dan, John, the seventh, who says Freddy's in good company. Bly Spirit, who thinks Justin's loathsome. And Witherspoon, who says Lillian's being used. But first, before the caller in us, before some segue chat onto random things, maybe like American Broadway musicals, it's Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
Jill decided to do a bit of sitting room parkour and scale the bookshelves like a sort of geriatric spider woman. Inevitably, she fell off and bust her ankle. Toby took this as an opportunity to grapple her into a wrestling hold, get her put in a home, stopping off at A&E first, and running round the hospital with her in a wheelchair, cornering on two wheels, cackling while Jill screamed with fury and tried to smack him with her handbag. A fall like that could be the beginning of the end for some people, said Ruth hopefully, bundling Jill into the back of the car and putting service station into her sat-nav. In the meantime, Rex decided that because his father had stopped his pocket money, he was going to live on lentils, which will also take care of the central heating bills as long as he wears baggy trousers. In fact, him and Bert could hook his underpants up to the bungalow and live entirely off-grid. Over at Brookfield, the aliens had landed. This manifested in Jill continuing her dramatic personality change. I know she has an obsession with Toby, but she started saying things she wouldn't ever have said before. Pleasant couple. Always nice to help your neighbours. Who is she? Has the real Jill been stolen by aliens and implanted in some sort of Martian breeding programme because they wanted to boost their lemon drizzle cake output and we'd be left with a cyber Jill? In another bizarre alien intervention, not only has Pip managed to get the universally loathed Fair Brethren land on the farm, one installed with their farm worker and the other shagging her and living in her cottage, but she's now suggesting that her father gives them a rent break on land David wishes they weren't renting at all. This is clearly mind control. I would love to know exactly who she thinks she is. Happy birthday to Pat. She celebrated by eating tuna sandwiches and changing Giddy Jack's nappy. God, that woman knows how to live. She then gave a weird speech in which she started talking about members of her family as if they weren't there. I lost my daughter for several months. Yes, this daughter here. Look, no, this one, the one sitting 2 inches away from me. Miranda wanted to give Lillian a helping hand with Justin. Really? He's an older gent. That may be a bridge too far. They had a diary session at the Dower House and then Miranda got her foot stuck in a bucket and fell over. Did anyone else notice, by the way, we had a right you are every day last week. A new Lily Pargita was introduced, who sounds terrifically irritating. Any teenager that refers to hanging around with friends as networking would have her head flushed repeatedly down the lavatory, and quite right too. Freddie has clearly inherited his father's brains. He scooped them up off the lower Loxley Terrace, apparently. There was more boring nonsense about herbal lays, mob grazing and the land grab. I'll summarise for you. Adam was cross, but now he's happy. Brian was happy, then he was cross, now he's happy again. Jenny Darling was cross, and now she's happy. Kate is mad, analysis is thick. The word leverage is used. That is as much as I got. Titchy Knob has now been so rigorously shafted by Justin, the button girl, Susan at the shop, Debbie and half the village that he can't actually sit down comfortably anymore. So he was sitting on his little rubber cushion when all of a sudden Stefan appeared, covered in bits of culvert, asking for money in his best Sir Mr. Bond voice. I was just passing from Latvia, said Stefan. I need some startup money. I would like to start my own nuclear weapons factory with own sweet evil baddie lair and crocodile pit. There was a splendid rest of the party at Home Farm, or Homicide Farm, if Lillian could get behind Miranda at the top of the stairs. She made all my hard work look like froth and frippery, said Lillian crossly. No, surely not. Prancing about at the village panto, sponsoring some awards that were won by Lillian's cousin, who was nominated by Lillian. My God, she's like Angelina Jolie at UNICEF. How could Miranda say that was froth? Sadly, though, Lillian let Justin talk her into continuing their great love affair once more. Well, which of us can't resist a cowardly two-timing money-grubbing arsehole? And over at Ambridge View, Tracy said that Susan looked like a 50s film star on her photos. Boris Karloff in Voodoo Island, maybe. The end.
That I actually enjoyed that this week. Well done.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. It made me laugh on more than one occasion. I really did. I don't know about Tracy Horobin, you know.
What?
Well, I love her and I wince in equal measure. You know, you clench your buttocks. You know, ooh, yes. Which one? Load of clenching going on in my underwear whenever she comes on my radio. Love her, but just, oh. Obviously, she's comedy relief, but come on. Let's see where it goes. But I wanted to get Roy. I do wanted to get him. I know she's wildly inappropriate, but
she's a bit of a kind of a 70s sitcom throwback, isn't she?
That's spot on. Well
the
done.
The sex mad single woman who can't read the signals, and it's like something off Open All Hours, you know, chasing him round the court. It's like Benny, you know, chasing him round the shop, saying, "Look at my etchings." You know, it's just, it's a little bit. She's too tone deaf to be real. I know she is comedy. She is comedy relief. Mm. And you know, he did obviously respond when she snogged, judging by those appalling noises. She did obviously respond when she snogged him. But there is something a little bit. Oh, you know, if that was a bloke, you wouldn't. If that was a bloke pursuing a woman in the way that Tracy's pursuing. Roy, we'd all be going, "Hey, hang on, that's a bit off." You know, she's basically sort of really pressuring him. And,
well,
you know,
we wouldn't be saying it's a bit off. We were saying it was bloody bang out of order, and he was, you know, stalking, etc. But anyway, let's hope that she gets slightly toned down and slightly fleshed out.
Yeah.
Character-wise, not kind of like, you know, comely womanly, shapely-wise, because she's pretty fleshed out in that regard. We're led to believe. What else caught your eye last week in Ambridge? I am loving
Kirsty. I am loving her attitude to the pregnancy and wanting to keep everybody away from it and being furious that it's being back. Because, people have been saying, "Oh, God, she's really overreacting." But she had the single biggest humiliation somebody can have. She basically had her boyfriend said to her in front of the entire village, "Actually, I don't love you enough." That's, you know, and there is nothing. I can't imagine anything apart from, you know, walking in and find. But even if she walked in and found him in bed with someone else, Tom, I mean, you know, at least that's private. It's known between her and Tom and the other person. But to be jilted in front of the entire village and all your relations and friends, when everyone knows how committed you are and how much preparation's gone into this and all that. And it's no wonder that she's hypersensitive about, you know, anyone else interfering in this or being, you know, she's so anxious about being coerced into something that she's not in control of. And I think they're playing that absolutely beautifully. I love Kirsty. And I think that whole storyline is just that characterization is just absolutely spot on. Stomping around the country park by herself saying, "No, well, you can come if you like. I'm not going to talk to you," whatever, you know, and all that. It's sort of, yeah, really nice.
Well, I think that was, for the most part, a very accurate portrayal of our Kirsty. And obviously, she's a total listener favourite, because she's got a proper pair of cojones, hasn't she?
Yeah.
You know, however, her problem in all of this is to make a little baby, you need a pair of cojones, and she doesn't technically have a pair of cojones. she used Tom's, didn't she?
And she didn't use Tom. She was
No. To make her baby, Tom's cojones were used. Let me slightly rephrase it. And the problem is, right, I take all of that. I could only but imagine the humiliation. There she is on a big day in her frock, and you know, she's in effect fought for Tom. You know, fought him back from the clutches of Brenda and the woman to, you know, the buyer and stuff.
No,
and
the buyer dumped him. She didn't have to.
Oh, but yeah, but, you know, still, you know, she's hung on in there, and then she turns up in a frock and she lets out that scream, you know, when he says, well, and, you know, and the pearl necklace. And the pearl necklace fell on St. Stephen's floor with great abandon. But the problem is, it's her pregnancy.
First time there's ever been a pearl necklace on St. Stephen's floor. But anyway, mm-hmm. Sorry. Carry on.
But the problem is, it's kind of his child too, biologically. And he does have some level of, you know, emotion. It's her pregnancy, not denying that. And you kind of... Listen.
She's not being unreasonable. She's saying, yes, you can be involved. You can, you know. She's not being unreasonable at all. She has refused to marry him.
I'll tell you what's unreasonable. Did I say she needs to marry him? I'm not some Victorian father.
No. But the fact that she won't, but, you know, that he assumed
loose.
Yes. Right. Am I getting a bit impassioned? Sorry. Little Miss Giggly.
No, Little Miss Droppy right now.
Getting all carried away with yourself.
No, just calm down. Yes. Calm down, Freeman. No, but I think, right, for her to be so indignant that Tom couldn't keep this to himself is a little bit unfair. But she was shat on from a great height. You know, I'm not forgetting all of that, right? Yeah. And she's a ball of feelings and whatever. However, it's kind of his child too. Does she have primacy in all of this? Absolutely. Is it her pregnancy? Absolutely. But, you know, as a bloke who's been told a couple of times, you're going to be a father, right? It's a hard thing to keep to yourself, especially the first time.
Right.
You know, it's just very hard, you know, because you're struggling with, you know, you say that she's out of, you know, that she didn't have control over this. Less so him.
Mm.
Less so him. Right. So I just think when everybody's like...
Yeah, but of all the people to tell, she goes and tells Helen, who is incapable of keeping her trap shut. Helen's need to control is so massive that she can't. She can't not then let Kirsty know that she knows. She just can't.
Mm. Well, and all, but
she could have told her dad. He could have told his dad.
Yeah, but one of the things which has really come out in the last year with the whole Helen and Rob thing is kind of how close Tom and Helen actually are, and. You know, there was the whole thing with the contact meetings and Tom being there. There were two or three instances when Tom kind of discovered what was going on, and Helen did kind of confide in Tom, and Tom wanted to, you know, go around and kind of like, you know, literally to bash Rob's lights out and stuff. So they do have a very close relationship. I think it's entirely understandable that this bloke who's been told for his one night of passion with a woman who he does love, right, that he's going to be a father, that, you know, he's got all manner of feelings and thoughts banging around in his head, and he tells his sister. He didn't put it in the parish council minutes, did he? And say, exactly. He didn't, you know, stand on top of a chair in the ball and go, you know, I've got an announcement to make. My tackle works. I've knocked up Kirsty. He didn't.
Yeah.
He told the closest person to him, his sister.
Yeah, who's got a gob like a barn door.
No, she hasn't.
She has!
Oh, God. Well, if she had a gob like a barn door, right, why didn't she tell everybody about the abuse that Rob was subjecting her to?
Because that was her thing.
Who's she gone off and told?
Because she wants
Who
to...
Who has she gone off and told?
Kirsty! It's fine her knowing.
And that's because she, as far as Helen's concerned, her and Kirsty are best muckers. So she's like, why didn't you tell me?
Yes, me.
She didn't turn round to her mum, Pat, and say, oh, you heard Tom's news.
No, she said, I'm a little bit disappointed that Kirsty didn't tell me.
Listen, I agree, right? She shouldn't have gone after Kirsty. And I'm not talking about Helen. I'm just, as a bloke, as I said,
I understand the need to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
I do understand that.
On the one hand, you're petrified. On the other hand, you're excited. On the other hand, you're just like confused.
How can you be confused? You had unprotected sex with a woman and now she's pregnant.
No, there's no, not no. You're confused about what the future may bring.
Ah, oh, okay. A baby.
Lucy, you know when you gave birth?
Yes.
To either one of your children, did you exactly know what the future was going to hold for them?
No.
There you go. It's a step into the unknown, isn't it?
Yes.
There you go.
Well, I wouldn't have told Helen anyway.
Who's the first person you told?
That I was pregnant?
Other than Simon.
Who was the first person you told?
Well, I don't know.
Your lawyer.
Well, that is a very good question. It's a very good question. Because my situation wasn't too dissimilar to Tom's. And so I battled with, hey, what?
Are you sure? And all the things that make women want to throw bricks at your head.
No, yes. Well, you know, yeah. I said, well, if you're not quite sure, let's go down the docks. And the docks confirmed in a nanosecond that she was up duff. And I come back. I don't know how that car drove itself back because I wasn't concentrating on anything. But we managed to get back in one piece. And I said, well, then. Well, you know, we don't really have a future. And
relationship over by that stage?
Yes. Oh, hence, Lord. I said I was in some rather Tom situation.
Okay.
So I'm not going to lie. It took me a good 2 weeks to get my head round this.
Right.
And you know what, Luce? Fatherhood can be a very abstract experience. And I think being a parent can be in general. But I was told by my cousin, who I probably told my cousin first, actually. So there's the answer to the question. My cousin, one of my 90-odd cousins, I told first. And he said to me, his son was maybe about 2. You're told that you need to have feelings for this person that will come. And you know that you will, and you do, and you get genned along and excited by by the pregnancy and what's going to happen. But she starts off with a level of emotion and feeling because it's grown within inside her, and she can feel it. You know, even if she just wakes up and she feels ill, she knows that something's actually happening, and it's within her and it's part of her. But with you, it's very much an abstraction. And then from day one, you are, you are an appendage, is what he said. But with each day, you know, that love will grow just that little bit more.
Yeah.
Whereas she just starts with just a whole level of feeling and understanding and emotion and intuitiveness that you don't have. And he says, you know, it's an excellent and a fantastic ride and stuff. But be prepared to be bewildered and just go, this thing is now part of me, and not necessarily to connect with it at every moment in the way that she does. And
there's a psychological school of thought that says men develop love for a child by caring for it. They don't have it immediately. It's the act of looking after it that makes them love it. It's the requirement to look after it kicks in, and they're not sure what that's just you want your sperm to survive, whether it's in or out of the body. You know, it's sort of it's the next generation of you. It's carrying on your genes and all that. But it's the act of looking after something more vulnerable than yourself that makes you
Listen,
Love it. Love the child.
Yeah, absolutely. And also going through the whole ritual of, you know, the pre-birth, so going to the antenatal classes and stuff. And even then, it just felt like, well, somebody's about to tap me on my shoulder and say, this is what the grown-ups do. You know, you're just playing at all of this and stuff. You know, get back and, you know, continue to play with your Xbox or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but... you're completely right about the whole kind of the bonding for me and with Noah. It was less of an issue with Ella, but it was. And I remember holding him after the cord had been cut, and you know, taking him into the other room and showing him to my dad, and that had such a profound effect on me.
Oh,
and when my aunties were there. And something kind of kicked in then, and then dressing him for the first time, you know. And I remember I used to play with him on the windowsill. And I
that sounds dangerous.
No, yeah, it wasn't open.
Like a Michael Jackson scenario, though.
It wasn't open. There wasn't like 10,000 adoring fans, you know, outside of a Berlin hotel. But I know, I'd just say... and I'd always sing like Giant Steps Are What You Take When You're Walking on the Windowsill.
Aww.
And yeah. And then all the nights when his mum couldn't get him off to sleep, and we'd go for a little drive in the car, and I'd have these conversations with him, and he'd be like, you know, 3 months old. And I'd be saying, right, so, you know, so daddy's born in Birmingham. You know Birmingham, you know. Yeah, I'd be driving around in circles at 3 o'clock in the morning.
You were rigid about American presidents, didn't you, the poor little sod?
You know what? That obsession of mine hadn't kicked in then. This is like 2000.
That's
you know,
you ought to be eternally thankful for.
Yes, very true. But no. So I have a certain amount of sympathy with Tom, not with the jilting of Kirsty, but I just think it's just very easy and very knee jerk. Just to say, well, it's a baby, and it's a, you know what? It ain't just her baby, and the technology it stands in 2017, we still need two people actually to make a child. It's her pregnancy. I don't deny that. It's also her right to decide to do whatever she wants to do with this child, and obviously it's all kind of bound up with the past and what Tom's done to her. But I just think, you know what? Being a father... it's not the easiest thing in the world. Many men abscond and abrogate all responsibility and stuff. And you know what? They're bleeders and they're fuckers, because it's not the kid's fault. And you got somebody here who's actually saying, oh, I want to be around and blah, blah, blah. He's saying all the wrong things, but for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know.
I think as well it doesn't help if you look at their personalities. They're both control freaks. They're both very, very controlling people, Tom and Kirsty. So you've got two. Kirsty's trying to keep everything in so she can figure out what she is going to do and how she feels. And he's going, right, where do I fit in? What's my job? What do I do? How can I make this be a concrete thing that I understand? And so he's trying to force control onto Kirsty. So if he was just passive and said, okay, well, it's up to you and I'll wait for you to decide, it would be so much better. But he's just not that personality type in his whole business things, in the way he does everything. You know, he's and look how he's being with the house with Johnny and all that. You know, he is a controlling sort of person, but so is she. So it's a bit of a perfect storm, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, do you know what? I've just remembered something.
What's that?
When we first brought my daughter home from the hospital, I was in the sitting room, and Simon disappeared with Tilly. Mm-hmm. And I could hear him talking all over the house. And then he came back with her, and I said, I thought he was on the phone. And I said, what were you doing? Who were you talking to? And he said, I was showing her the facilities. as if he was at Centre Parks, you know. I didn't know what else to do, so I thought I'd show her the facilities.
Well, the I know it's a bit of a conversation we've half had before, but when Noah was born and he was in the birth canal, air quotes, inserted for, you know, 20 odd hours. So his head came out looking like a long tube of, of Toblerone or whatever. It's a ridiculous shape. And I was like, oh my God, I have to look after this for the next 18 years. And it's a freak. And in that time between taking him from the delivery room to the waiting room where my dad and my auntie and I think my granny was there as well, who's now passed on, where everybody was, you know, his head just like shrunk back to something that looked pretty normal. I was like, the relief but you know, the 30 seconds it took to get from one room to the other. And I did that thing and I says, this is your grandfather, this is your great granny, and, you know, and everybody's there kind of, you know, crying. And I think that in its essence, you know, what you said about Simon actually is the classic kind of father role, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's explaining the way that the world works and you know, the physical, metaphorical cutting of the umbilical cord, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So anyway, give him a bit of a break. But anyway, caller in as Freeman. I'm getting all wistful.
Oh, don't have another one. Roy Field, put it away.
Caller in as Freeman.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Claire Howard.
Hello, Dumpty Dummy, it's Claire Howard from Hertfordshire. I don't think I've ever mentioned, but I'm Claire L. Howard on the Twitter. My call is regarding Kirsty, and it's been, the plot line has been sailing at my head at the rate of knots over the last few weeks, but I really do think that Kirsty and Roy are going to end up together, because she's desperately in wanting somebody dependable and reliable, and although I don't think she's passionately in love with Roy, I think that she will feel that he might be the best option to help her with baby, and she might convince herself that she is in love with him, and I think that's going to happen. Tom's going to be heartbroken, and possibly he deserves it, I don't know. Anyway, that's my plot prediction for this week. Thanks very much. Bye.
I don't think she's talking about Kirsty and Roy ending up together. I don't think Kirsty is looking for anyone dependable and reliable other than herself. I think she's hoping she's going to be dependable and reliable, which she is. And I think we can, as Royfield said last week, I think we can do without the old eternal triangle again.
Mm.
Kirsty, Roy and Tom. It wouldn't surprise me if Roy proposed to Kirsty, because I think Roy is so lost at the minute. He wants to feel useful to somebody. And worthy, and it would make him feel better about himself because he still feels terrible. So it wouldn't surprise me if he proposed to her to sort of try and fix everything for her.
Wouldn't he have to get divorced first?
Oh, yes. No, they are, aren't they?
Are they? I don't think they are.
I thought because he was gloomy one day and he said, oh, I've had the letter from Haley's. Or was he gloomy because he'd found out Haley was going out with somebody?
That was it, yeah.
That was it.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
they're not divorced.
Have they filed? Are they? Oh. Oh. Anyway, yes. So I don't think she's looking for anyone dependable and reliable other than herself, who, to be frank, is the only person that you need in your life to be dependable and reliable. Claire Asprey now.
Hi Dumpty Dum, it's Claire from Clapham here. It's been a couple of weeks since I rang in, and I only just caught up again on the Christmas episode with the poor sound quality. So I've got a long list of things I wanted to say, mainly about Dumpty Dum, more than about the Archers necessarily. Anyway, I'll start by saying I really, really enjoyed listening to Millie Bell's interview over Christmas, and please, Millie Bell, don't just read out the social media stuff. Come tell us what you're thinking, and I'd love to hear more from you. Secondly, entirely agree with the stuff about sewing. It's flipping difficult to turn out a lot of costumes, and I say this as someone who did a qualification in theatre wardrobe, back in the day. Thirdly, really interested about now everyone knows that Toby disappears to Brighton for mysterious purposes. And the fact that he did this and left everyone in the lurch about the panto now means that half the village are going, what does he do in Brighton? What can he be getting up to there? And I'm really surprised that even a year, like a week later or so, no one's thought to ask him, what have you been doing in Brighton? Or endlessly ask Pip, what does he do in Brighton? To the point that Pip absolutely loses her rag and demands him for him to tell her. I was really prompted to ring in, though, about the fantastic conversation between Royfield and Lucy about Tom and Kirsty. And, oh my gosh, Lucy, I'm so with you about men being useless and needing women to sort them out. And actually, that's true from what Steve said about Debbie rolling in like the good fairy. And that got me to think about, you know, which men are actually grown up and don't need sorting out in the entire village. It was quite a short list, in my view. And on it, I have Alan, who I think on the whole is fairly good and doesn't need too much looking after. Neil, who actually is the person who can talk Susan down from some of her more ridiculous flights of fancy. Ian, who everyone thinks is an incredibly sensible person, but has had a wobbly this last year. Robert, who again is a steadfast husband who talks his wife down from ridiculous flights of fancy at times. Chris, who we don't hear anything from, but I think on the whole doesn't need too much looking after from Alice. Mike, although he's not dead, he's just in Birmingham these days. Maybe Harrison, and also Jazza as an interesting case study, who does get himself into ridiculous scrapes, but I don't think ever expects a sensible woman to get him out of it, which is kind of refreshing. I quite like Jazza for all his craziness. Agree that Tom is both a pinhead and a twonk, but genuinely good-natured at heart and trying to do the right thing. And a little bit disappointed about the Kirsty pregnancy thing. It's a bit too soapy tropey for me. And I did think she was smarter than that. So I'm with both Royfield and Lucy on that one. Anyway, really enjoying the show and keep up the good work.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, Blythe Spirit calling. Well, I just wanted to wish everyone a very happy new year. And even though it's a pretty dank January out there, isn't there a lot going on in the Archers right now to keep us lively? I just wanted to say, before I go on to anything else, yay, Stefan, yay. That came out of nowhere, didn't it? I'm so looking forward to this storyline and where it's going to go. The blackmail, the culverts, all of that reappearing, it's all going downhill for the Dark Lord, and I am just enjoying this so much after the after what we've been through this last 2-3 years with the whole Helen Titchener storyline. So yeah, really, really looking forward to that. The main reason I'm calling in, though, is to follow up on what Lucy said last week about the difference in genders and how women seem to have to fix men all the time. I really noticed it this week, and it was borne out particularly in the conversation between Helen and Tom, where Tom described his baby with Kirsty as a quote-unquote joint project. Do I really need to say any more? Also, the situation between Justin and Lillian, and oh my goodness, I mean, doesn't it show what a complete arsitude and bastard Justin is, and a coward too? The fact that he's prepared to submit both of the women in his life to intense humiliation says a lot about the man. He could have been kinder. He could have given Lillian a get out at that point with some level of dignity. He hasn't done that. In fact, he wants the affair to continue. And quite frankly, if Lillian has any self-respect, she will take Justin's credit card, hand it back, and tell him to stick it where the sun don't shine. Anyway, that's it from me. Still keeping warm. Hope everyone else is, with lots of hot chocolate and blankets and nice things. Cheers now. Bye.
Yes. Why does no one just ask? Why doesn't anyone ask Toby? If the whole village now knows that Toby wasn't in the play because he was in Brighton, surely at least 17 people would have said, what were you doing in Brighton? Bearing in mind people in Ambridge never
go
anywhere.
Yeah, but he's got his excuse, isn't it? He said it was a boys' night out thingy. And no, he wasn't his friend Mucker Johnny something or another. He'd come up with some random name of somebody who was going through a rough time, he said. Yeah. A rough time, and he needed a shoulder to cry on, and that's the reason why he needed to pop down. So he does have that excuse.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I think we're running Claire Asprey and Blythe Spirit together.
Okay.
Because they both were talking about the rant I went on last week about
sewing.
No, that was the week before.
Oh.
I have one rant per show. You know
you
that.
You do. You do.
Last week's rant
was
about...
I like to save mine up.
I know.
For stabbings.
25 minutes for stabbings.
Fuck off. I can't help being a little bit verbose.
No,
times.
I was laughing at you saying for stabbings. I thought it was very funny.
Oh.
Yes, about all the men needing the women to fix them. Ooh. And so Claire suggested Neil, Alan and Robert as men that do not need fixing in the Archers. There aren't very many. Oh, actually, Pat and Tony are actually quite equal, aren't they?
Mm.
Because if you look at Neil, Alan and Rob, Neil and Robert, anyway, they're both sane because their wives are a bit loony. Alan is different. He's different because he has to have a greater sense of self and integrity and everything else because of his position in the village. So maybe it's like we can't have just a couple who are just equal. We have to have one to balance out the other. And couples don't necessarily work like that every time. It's not that overt, is it, that you have one. I mean, everyone knows couples where one does all the talking and one is silent, or one is very angry and one is very passive or whatever. But I think couples do balance each other out. But I mm-hmm. think it's not always as overt as the Archers possibly makes it, which is kind of you can only have a sane male if he's got an unstable wife. You can't just have a sane male and a sane female in the same family. Maybe mm-hmm. Ruth and David are ish. Pat and Tony are ish.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because more time's been invested in their relationship in terms of the plot progression and stuff. I don't know. Characterization. And yes, talking about Mike and Betty, Mike relied a lot on Betty when they first got together, because Mike was a proper firebrand and Betty and was very undiplomatic and was always rowing with people, and Betty was there to sort of calm him down and mend the fences that he'd knocked down, and you know, she sort of she was the peacemaker. So yes, he did rely on her a lot when he was younger, but now he's the one that calms Vicky down more, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah. Well, we don't know, do we?
Exactly.
We're not allowed to know.
But anyway, where are we?
Well, we've done Claire's call, Claire Asprey's
call. With Blythe Spirit.
But with Blythe Spirit. And Blythe Spirit talks about Justin being an absolute coward. I mean, I agree. If he's saying, I couldn't call you because she's looking at my phone. Mm-hmm. I couldn't come and see, you know. Basically, he's just thrown her out the window and said, at what point, why has he said, if he's so miserable with Miranda, why hasn't he ever talked about getting divorced?
Yeah, but Luce, you know and I know that relationships come in a whole manner of sizes and configurations. And just because he says he's unhappy in one regard doesn't mean that he's completely unhappy. And obviously they have a way of working and they have a history. And this is not to absolve him of any guilt in terms of his shameless carryings on, but Miranda does know that he's carrying on with Lillian, and I don't know whether you would presume that the whole thing last week was for her to say, well, you know, I am, as my cousin would say, I am Justin's A1 woman, right? Whatever is going on between you pair is very secondary to what I have with Justin. But I don't know for a fact that she was saying nothing can go on at all. I genuinely don't know. You just presume that's it. And she just,
well,
you know,
that's the case, then mm-hmm. she would never have left Justin and Lillian in the drawing room at Home Farm by themselves.
Well, I did think that also.
But, I mean, no one's that interested in watercolours.
Obviously, Jennifer is. Now, that was a new one for me. Was that Jennifer stated before that she's really into watercolours? Because I couldn't remember
it.
Yeah,
no. Made up on the hoof, I think.
Okay.
I don't think she'd ever mentioned, because Brian had to backfill, didn't he, and say, oh, that's the lot you're always trying to get me to go to, isn't it? And I thought, oh, don't patronise us. We know you just put that in to try and make sense of the fact that, you know, and the fact that it was so transparent. I mean, that they're sitting there going, and she's going, come along, Brian, let's go and show Miranda the watercolours. And he's going, why? I don't care. Oh, the watercolours. Yes, yes, I'll come with. Yes, I'm gagging to see some watercolours. Let's leave the man who's in charge of my land deal and my sister-in-law in the same room, even though they just had a massive falling out in front of his wife. You know, it's just bollocks. But anyway, and it was quite, I was just very disappointed in Lillian, because I think she should have said to him, you shameless coward, if you were so unpleasant to me and completely let your wife bully me without saying a word, you can stuff right off. But she didn't. She went, oh, do you think there's still a chance, Justin? I thought, oh, for God's sake.
You know, these things are a little bit complicated, though, aren't they? And my problem is with all of this is that she's probably emotionally entangled with the guy. I have very little qualms with two grown-up adults saying, you know what, our ships are going to bump in the night, but we can keep this within certain bounds. I don't have a problem with that at all. But yes, she, for me, she's the weaker party, not because there is because she's carrying on with a married man, is that she's emotionally involved with him in a way that it doesn't appear that he is with her.
Which is exactly what I said was happening.
Oh, shut your cake hole. Lillian's let me down, right? I was not wrong. Sure, Lillian has just let me down.
Anyway, we should go on to Yokel Bear now.
Oh, all right,
who's having a small class war all of his own.
Oh, this week, yet another one.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yokel Bear here, calling from the quite sleet-covered hills of Yokelshire. I'm in fighting mood this week, and I'm weighed down on my shoulder by a big working-class chip this week, because the bit this week that got my goat up was the posh people, Miranda and Justin. That whole scene where they got Lillian in and all that kind of, you know, you could imagine the smug look on Miranda's face. And I got all a bit class war, to be honest with you. I got quite angry. And I'm getting more and more hacked off with Justin. He thinks he's the lord of the manor. With Lillian, he's bedding the locals. What they call it? Droit de seigneur. Yeah, we don't do that anymore, Justin. So, yeah, I was in fighting mood over this. And there should be a revolution. Hey, maybe that's it. Maybe there needs to be an Ambridge revolution. Maybe the Carters and the Grundys need to rise up and throw off the oppressors like Les Mis. Get the furniture out and the barricades in the street. So, yeah, I really don't like Justin and Miranda, but I think it might be because of the big working class chip on my shoulder. I'm going to sign off now by saying, workers of Ambridge, to the barricades.
Anti the posh people, Miranda and Justin, smugness, he says. Aux armes, mes amis, Justin. Yokel Bear has discovered his inner Les Miserables, like he said. Yeah, it was all a bit twee and obnoxious, wasn't it? But I did really appreciate Justin making Rob stay behind to do his work. That was very good. And I thought, you see, there are advantages of being a posh, obnoxious git, aren't there? Because you can make people like Rob do what you say. I know, Yokel Bear, but that's what life in the country is like. You just have to get used to it, love.
No, it was good to see the reason why Justin picks the people that he does for the job. So he can absolutely bully them in that
way. He does that very nice, affable, oh, hello, or a hail fellow, well met business. And then all of a sudden he becomes very chilly and, you know, aggressive, doesn't he?
Yes.
Ha ha ha. Glyn now.
What's Glyn talking about this time, Lucy?
Toby and Jill.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. First of all, may I wish all Dumpty Dummers everywhere a very happy new year. A couple of things on my mind in regard to the Archers at the moment. First is, what is Brian up to on this deal, now allowing Adam to continue with the herbal lays? Is he just trying to bring the family with him, or is there something more to it? Well, we'll find out in due course, I'm sure. And then the other thing I'm exercised about is the Jill and Toby continuing conflict storyline. Getting a bit fed up with it, to be honest. Wish the scriptwriters would bring it to a head. We know that Toby's a bit of an idiot. We probably know more about his behaviour than Jill does. But even so, I thought she's been very ungracious towards him since he helped her after her accident, and he clearly didn't cause it. And her saying so is just a bit ridiculous. So please, scriptwriters, bring this one to a head, put us all out of our misery, or put me out of my misery anyway. Thank you to the Dumpty Dum team for continuing to produce this marvellous podcast, and a good week in Ambridge to all.
Jill is behaving really weirdly. I'm hoping there's going to be some explanation for this. I mean, as I said in the monologue, you know, I appreciate that she's got this obsession with Toby. That's fine, understandable within her lights kind of thing. But the words she's using are really odd. It sounds like she's not kind of... The Jill that we are hearing now would not be a Jill that was anti-hunting, that was anti-private school, that was friends with Carol Toboggan. She's not the same. She's turned into Peggy Light. It's really weird. She's kind of saying, you know, like I said in the monologue, she's going, ooh, what pleasant people. It's just very, very, I mean, I'm no massive fan of Jill, but I really would have disliked her earlier if she'd been like this all the way through. So what's going on, and why is no one noticing that she sounds completely different to normal? Is it just me, or what do you think? Has no one else noticed? Is it me?
No. Other people have actually said this isn't Jill, right? But to be fair to the script writers, with the exception of the death of Phil, when has she really had a major part in anything recently? But then there was the whole move to Lower Loxley.
Yeah.
So we have had...
And the writing death.
Yeah. We have had snippets of it. Yeah.
The writing death.
Yeah. But in terms of exploring her character, we haven't had anything like this in eons, have we?
No, but they seem to be exploring someone else's character because it doesn't sound like her.
It's the words, but it's supposed to come from a place of she's never felt that she was the love of Phil's life. She's always thought that she was an afterthought,
yeah.
and she's buried away all these feelings of, you know, all these years, and then they've just been resurfaced, and ultimately it's just a gigantic plot device to remind us of the continuum of the Archers all the way from the 50s and the death of Grace. But
I get all that. I just don't understand why she's now using words and phrases that she would never have used.
New director of the Archers.
It's just really weird.
Don't know. But it's for me, the whole thing's been kind of slightly turned up on the dial a little bit too high. But
yeah. Too much, too quick.
It is, but I love me some Jill, so I couldn't disagree with you more about you've never been a fan of Jill. It's like, who are you? She's a stalwart of the show, matriarch.
No, but I never used to think, oh, goody, it's Jill, like the way I'd think, oh, goody, it's Susan, or Linda, or whatever.
I hear that.
She was mostly trunching on about jam and, you know, Kenton not behaving himself and whatever else, you know. But that's more the fault of the storylines, as you said, isn't it?
Exactly.
Or not the fault, but the issue with the storyline.
Mm.
Can we do my favourite caller in now?
Who's that this week?
What do you mean this week? I'm not as fickle as you. Naked Fingers. With what, his lovely voice.
Wait a minute. What happened to the bloke who was the gardener? Wasn't he your favourite?
I don't know. Yes. No, what happens is I tell them they're my favourite and then they never call in again. That's the pattern. I've given up now. I don't care. I might start telling people I don't want to call in that they're my favourite just to get trouble.
Okay.
They want to call in. Naked Fingers.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Naked Fingers here. And I've just finished listening to Friday night's episode of The Archers. Oh, my God. I know I've had a little wine, but I'm not completely pissed. I'm only slightly pissed. But, oh, my God, the return of Stefan. We've been saying, haven't we, for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Oh, well, months and probably a year. Stefan. Oh, there's always Stefan. What happened to Stefan? Oh, Rob must have paid him off, or Rob's chucked him in the silage. But he's back. He's back with a vengeance. And Rob has got to pay the ferryman. I have a prediction. And I think, and call me hot-headed, call me a fantasist, call me slightly drunk, but I think Rob is going to kill Stefan. Rob will kill him in some kind of tussle. Ironically, he might even stab him, who knows. And Rob will go down, and that will be the end of Rob, that will be the end of Helen's problems. He'll never have to see Giddy Jack or Henry again, and he will fuck well and truly off. That is it. The end. Goodbye.
Call me a fantasist, he says. You're a fantasist, Naked Fingers. yes, I think you're right. And I can completely see Rob doing something to Stefan, because basically Stefan threatens his job. And as Roy Ford says last week, his job is the only thing now that Rob has left. But it's interesting now that I don't think of him as Titchy Knob anymore. I think of him as Rob, because now he's lost his power. When he had a lot of power, or I felt he had a lot of power and control, I called him Titchy Knob as a way of reducing his
penis size.
His power and his ability to control. But now I feel that's been taken away from him. I don't need to do it anymore. Isn't that weird? Anyway, yeah, I've confused myself now. Yes, Stefan actually threatens his job, which is the one thing that Rob's got left. But Sean O'Connor said that Rob was going to be around for another 20 years. So whether that was just something that Sean said off the cuff, I don't know. But, you know, I can't see him being put away. But I mean, even if he's put away for murdering Stefan or whatever, he could still, there's still a chance that he would have an impact on the boys' lives, because they'd be visiting and all that sort of stuff.
Well,
and Helen would have to take them to the prison to see him and all that sort of thing.
He's not going to murder Stefan.
I think Naked Fingers, because he was slightly in an advanced state of refreshment when he rang in, I think possibly maybe not murder, but I think we haven't heard from harassment for ages, and I think harassment will catch Rob attempting to assault Stefan, and then he'll be
was that Friday's episode when can I just say, and you did a masterful job in your monologue, but my God, that was some hammy sounding nonsense and foolishness. It was just like, please. I seriously, seriously did think, what the hell, sixth form amateur hospital radio drama have I just tuned into?
I thought it was so funny. I loved the but all I remember is just 27 simultaneous tweets from my time. I go, fucking hell, it's Stefan! It was so funny. And he's, you know, it was the quiet, the menace, you know, the really hammy menace, wasn't it? He's tied Rob to the train tracks.
That's exactly it.
Well, I don't care if it's happy or not. I love it. I love the way that all Titchy Knob's chickens are coming home to roost, and not only to roost, but to poo on his head. Hoorah! They've come home to roost on a branch right above him.
It's hard to see how he can survive this, but and that's the reason why I suppose we pay our license fee to have this great drama, you know, thrust upon us, and we are going to find out if Rob is truly around for 20 odd years, you know, because as I said last week, if that's to be the case, there needs to be some normalisation of Rob as this sparingly used regular character, you know, like something like a Linda Snell, but less so, in that you can actually go a couple of months without hearing you know, Linda at all, but then she'll kind of like pop up and she drives some storyline at some point, etc., etc., and then of course she has a two annual forays into Ambridge with the Fate, and then with the Christmas Panto type of thing, and that's what we need Rob to be. But as I said many moons ago, the man's evil and a git and a bastard. And actually, they should have just left it at the Helen stuff. We didn't need all the culvert stuff and the this and the that and the that and the this.
Yeah, because it was enough that he was doing what he was
absolutely
doing.
Absolutely, because for me, it just feels so contrived.
Oh, I don't care. I just love it. I do not care whether it's contrived.
But if you're going to do it, just do it well. And I'm sure, you know, I don't want to say...
I'd be quite happy to find out that he had kidnapped Shergar and was behind the Brinksmack gold bullion robbery, frankly. I'd swallow that in an instant. I'd go, yep, I knew it was him, bastard. And, you know, yeah, that'd be it. Fine. Don't care. Realism's gone out the window. I'm all about the revenge now.
Fair enough. Now, have we got any emails? Are we at the end of the call?
We haven't finished the callers yet.
God, good grief. This is going to be... Okay, it's a long episode, this one. All right, and I'm going to recline back in my leather-bound chair, take a sip of my coffee, and you can bring us in with the next caller.
Debs in Germany. Yes. Having Ethan did not suit Titchenob's purpose. Oh, now she said Titchenob then, so I did too. Yeah, it was really interesting. It's like we were saying before about he's now lost his power. He just sounds, you know, when Justin said, well, you can just stay here and finish off that thing, because I did say I would like it by Friday, blah, 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 blah. And he sort of just sounded completely deflated. And the fact that, like you said, he's got no one to go home to. There's no Helen sitting there, you know, endlessly cooking meals on the off chance that he might have gone off something in the over the course of the day, you know, or... you know, any of that. He's just a sad, lonely, nasty man. And he's shrunk, hasn't he? At the moment, it's about 2'6", I think. Dan John the Seventh.
Hi, Dumdy Dummers. Dan John the Seventh here, calling about Freddie's maths resit results. Well, Freddie's in good company. Grade statistics from EdXL say that out of the 40,000 students who sat GCSE maths in November, only about 28% of them passed with a C grade or better. So his D puts him firmly in the modal category there. The other thing to bear in mind is some of those students would have been students who'd got a grade C already and were attempting to improve their grade. So certainly most students don't pass in November. Really important he gets it in the summer, though, because if he doesn't, it'll be on the new specification GCSE, which, as everybody involved in teaching it knows, is loads harder. Anyway, good luck for Freddie in the summer, and a party at Lower Loxley around New Year time. Sounds a fantastic idea. What could possibly go wrong? Anyway, love the show. Bye.
Dan John the Seventh, you have put the fear of God into me. My daughter is just starting her GCSE choices, and you've said that the GCSEs are going to get harder. And quite frankly, I can't do my son's maths homework, and he is in year 8. So the chances of me being able to help her with hers is getting more and more remote by the second. Poor Freddie, though. What? Yeah. Why?
Oh, God.
Why can people not just let him leave school and go and become a, you know, carpenter or something that he actually likes? He's clearly not suited for academia in any way. But you know, and he's a bit of an arsehole because he's
that's kind of... not Freddie's greatest crime. It's the fact that he sounds like a total vacuous idiot.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Well, he just sounds like a hooray, doesn't he?
But like comedy hooray.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It doesn't even sound remotely believable.
No.
You know, he's a pastiche of a pastiche.
Yeah.
You know, and oh, I find him and Lily excruciating to listen to.
Yeah. Well, Lily's the new actress, isn't she?
Well, I did whatever, right? But all I know, Lucy, right?
I know.
Those lines could be Shakespearean, right? But when they're delivered out of those mouths, it's anything but.
They both need to be sent to Sierra Leone to go and work in a flipping camp for 6 months. That would sort them out. Overprivileged little buggers.
Well,
honestly.
I was going to say they are dripping with privilege. But it isn't just that, because that's the writing. It's the delivery.
Oh, really?
It's the delivery. And I'm sorry, my friends.
They're not coming on the show, eh?
Well, we have to keep this real, right? You know, we can't claim to be fans of this and say, everything's smashing and super. And, you know, that was the most fantastically written episode ever. And that was the most fantastically written, delivered bit of acting ever and always. And it just isn't the case. And sometimes, just as we call out and we say, you know what? The geezer that plays Rob, blinding.
Yeah.
Helen, smashing. You have to say, these young actors are starting out in their craft. Yeah. And it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Right. And you say to yourself, is this more the fault of whoever has directed that episode? You know, that they don't know how to coax out of them the right performance, or whether they're just not up for it.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't be doing our listeners justice if we just said everything served up to us was fab all the time. I'm sorry.
And anyway, we know perfectly well what our listeners think, because they don't hold back on Twitter to describe.
Exactly. And you know, and I just think a poor job is being done.
Right.
And I think it's quite poor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Harsh words from Mr. B there.
Yeah, and you know me, I love to sit on a fence, but I've come off the fence on this. Is just,
you've got splinters up your jacksie most of the time. Witherspoon now.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Let's get right down to business to talk about three of Ambridge's dysfunctional couples. First, Toby and Jill. Yes, Jill was at her most annoyingly passive-aggressive with the family after her fall. And frankly, I didn't like the script writing in these scenes. Jill just isn't that tone-deaf. And I actually agree with her. Toby is always somewhat rude to her in their interactions. He wasn't particularly polite when he entered the room. He didn't say, pardon me, sorry to disturb you. He acted like she was the interloper. Reminded me of when he called Jill Granny during one of their previous encounters. Pip still hasn't told her parents about her loan to Toby, and Jill will be proven right in the end. Second couple, Lillian and Justin. Last week, Lillian thinks she's being dumped and she's depressed. Then Justin says, no, Lillian, you're still my number one squeeze, and she's all happy again. Lillian, you're the guma, as Tony Soprano would say. You're being used. Used, I tell you. And you're going to be very hurt when this is all over. Third couple, a new one, Rob and Stefan. I'm sure this will be the topic of much discussion this week. So the manipulator is going to be out-manipulated. What fun! So I will make a small point here. Did you notice how quickly and smoothly Rob was able to launch into a lie about being unemployed and couch surfing? Just like old times with Helen. As we've said, the man is a sociopath, and sorry, Alan, your little bit of pastoral counseling, which I think you do because you feel it's your job, not because you want to do it, is a complete waste of time. As Lucy has said, a narcissist doesn't change his stripes unless he's had about 10 years of expert therapy. So that's it. No time to dawdle. Talk to you all soon. Witherspoon and Angus, signing off.
Yes, I noticed that. Rob just said, just whizzed straight into a lie. No, he hadn't seen this bloke for 18 months. He pops up and says, so how are you, Mr. Titchener? And he says, oh, I've lost my job, and I'm couch surfing. And you think, what? How quickly did you create that lie? You know, even the shock of seeing somebody that you hadn't seen for 18 months, never mind the circumstances under which you last saw them, surely that alone would stop you thinking up a convincing lie that quickly. But it's just so glib. It just comes rattling out. He's so disingenuous, unbelievable. And he sounds completely... Because when he said, I've lost my job, I thought, has he? No, I thought, I'm sure I haven't missed that episode. He hasn't, of course. No, he's still working, isn't he? But he's just amazing. That the compulsive, you know, the compulsive lie is so quick.
Mm. Well, but we know it's a compulsive lie. I'm less amazed by that, to be fair. But I'm sorry. You know me. I love me some Ambridge accent, and I'm just repeating myself. But I just think Lily, Freddie. Bad. Stefan, even worse. And I don't want to say comedy Eastern European accent, because I'm sure people say, no, actually, this bloke was born in Riga. But dearie me, it was just like laid on with a trowel. Oh,
have you heard my Eastern European joke, which sounds like it's going to be deeply racist? I don't think it is. I apologize if it is. You can, viewers, listeners can decide.
Well, Eastern Europeans are not a race.
Oh, so... that's right. Then. Yeah. Mm.
Now, if it's anti-Slavic, well, then they'd be racist.
Okay. An Eastern European man goes to the optician, and the optician's showing him the chart, and he says, "Can you read this line?" You know, the optician's chart where they have all.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He says, "Can you read this line?" He says, "Read it. I know him."
Really?
What?
Yes, it wasn't very good.
Oh.
I expect better from you.
Sorry. I'll send you emails now.
Go on then.
Miss Bubbles. Tom is an idiot. This is headed. I'm always happy with the emails that start with the phrase "Tom is an idiot." Cursed, I cannot believe Tom and Helen. Kirsty swears Tom to secrecy about her pregnancy. Tom immediately tells Helen. Sorry, we're not going to go back to the row we've already had about this. I can understand.
Less of it. I'll call that a discussion, Lucy.
All right. I can understand that he needs to talk to someone, but Roy knew already. Talk to him. Then Tom swears Helen to secrecy and makes a promise not to tell Kirsty she knows. What does she do? She asks Kirsty if she's planning any new projects. Kirsty doesn't respond. Helen simply states she knows Kirsty is pregnant. Does Helen know what a secret is? If I was Kirsty, I would hightail it out of Ambridge, because she's never going to get away from this. Yeah, I think you're right. Lillian should back slowly away from Justin. Slowly? She should go into fourth gear and roar off, leaving skid marks, as far as I'm concerned. I don't trust his victim routine. He doesn't let anyone push him around. I can't believe that he adopts such a submissive nature around his wife. I don't know. But I don't trust him.
I can. That's pretty standard, really. You can be a total bully and an alpha male and a total git in every other aspect of your life. But, you know, with your main emotional entanglement, you're different. It's a whole different set of dynamics.
Cosmo here in Cancun. Wi-Fi still poor. Don't care. Weather better. Really don't care. Cold gone. Hurrah. Writer this week was Mary Cutler, he says, who was getting a hard time on social media, unfairly in my view. She has some difficult jobs to handle. And here he rattles them off. Make Tracy appear attractive to Roy. Make Toby appear not to be completely feckless. Make friends between Rex and Pip. Make Pip the worst portrayed female character. Prove that Justin is pussy whipped. I hate that expression. Demonstrate that Brian can change his mind. Alienate all Jill's family against her in Toby's favour. And bring back Stefan, who has left blackmail a bit late. Very true. She's had a busy week, he says. Justin, by the way, is clearly incapable of standing up to his own wife and wanting his cake and eating it. Wasted millions on Barrow, employed the ineffectual Thomas, took on a cow expert to manage his estates, and now agrees a 10% price cut on property of which he's not the owner. Finally, wanting a report on changing contractor when he's gone to huge lengths to get home farm and no-till does not make sense. I despair, Cosmo. Well, if you're going to despair, Cancun is probably the best place to despair, I would say. Mm-hmm. Jane Roth.
Just before you go on, and it's just really just to emphasize what I was saying before, is that there is the writing And then there is the acting, and then there is the direction. And I don't doubt that that Mary Cutler had, you know, had a dodgy wicket last week, because we you know, things have obviously turned, so to speak, in terms of, you know, we had this major plot turn. You know, Stefan has returned back, but also we're having more and more of Lily and Freddie, and obviously this is kind of going somewhere. And you know, one of the criticisms of the Archers has been, you know, that a lot of the younger characters have been, you know, neglected. So I think those lines that came out of Freddie and Lily's mouths, I'm not talking about Stefan now, I just think that was just poor all round, to be honest with you. But I think those were inelegantly performed, though the writing was lacking also. I don't know. All I know is that there's three elements. There's the actor, there's, you know, how they're told to deliver it, and then there's actually the writing and stuff. And sometimes it's hard to, you know, disentangle, you know, where the problem actually lies and stuff. But, you know, right. But there is a problem.
Jane Roth now, who organised the Newcastle Dumpty Dum meetup.
Ooh.
She said, we had a great laugh discussing all things Archers and soon realised, A, we had our very own Cosmo among us in the form of Lillian, who came all the way from Middlesbrough by public transport and is not only a veritable mine of information, but also a treasure. And B, that Mia rivals Harriet for doing all the voices. Honestly, it was one revelation after another and a right laugh. Just imagine our surprise when a bonus attendee turned up in the shape of Deborah, who has never listened to Dumpty Dum, but also has encyclopedic lifelong knowledge. And she told us all about going to the Academic Archers thing last year, and the upshot is that they got some more bookings today, be there or be square. A good time was had by all, so thank you, Lucy and Royfield, for making it possible. We all love you, bracket, with the possible exception of Deborah. Well, Deborah, you need to pull your finger out and love us too, otherwise we'll get very sulky and rude. But that's great, and we're very happy, and Royfield and I actually got a little bit emosh, didn't we? Or you did, and then you told me you were, and then that makes me go as well, when you said about, you know, them all getting together, and it's all cause of us. It's very nice. It's lovely. Melanie Matthews, who begins her email, it is not community service. She said, I tried leaving you a speak pipe, but I'm living in a motorhome at the moment, long story, and it's pissing down with rain and the noise was interfering with the voice message. Are you doing grand designs and you are one of those people that ends up living in a caravan in your own front garden because your property has not been developed in time? She thinks she's a Siobhan. And she's a probation service officer. Ah, that's like a junior probation officer. We deal with less dangerous twonks like Toby, while the fully fledged probation officers work with evil shitbags like Titchy Knob. So you have probably guessed I'm phoning in about Brighton. Firstly, until November, I worked in the Brighton probation office, so if Toby had been on our books, I would have known about it. Secondly, he wants to be on probation in Brighton if he lives in Ambridge. Probation have police officers co-located in their offices to provide them with police intelligence on what the offenders are up to. So they refused to supervise anyone who doesn't live in their area because it would be much harder to get that information. They would have transferred into the local Borsetshire Probation Service, which would be a nightmare because they're all privatised now and it's bloody impossible to get hold of anyone in another area. And when you do, they don't want to take the case unless it's a really easy one because they're all understaffed and it will affect their targets. No, really, I'm not exaggerating, but don't get me started on the stupidity of privatisation in probation and prisons and why I think it's made the public lives more dangerous, as well as letting down the offenders who actually want to lead a better life but need a bit of help, because I could go on for a very long time and get very shouty, she puts in capital letters.
I, for one, would like pull up a chair, sit down, get comfy and listen to that rant, because there's some services that should just not be privatised.
Yes, yes.
And that's one of them.
Yes.
You know what? If the state is going to lock somebody up, try and rehabilitate them, punish somebody, whatever, that's the state's job. And profit should not be a motive for an individual doing that job. So I would say rant away, love, you know. But anyway
she carries on. She's not ranting, but she carries on. Anyway, he can't have a tag, Toby, because you are tagged to a certain address. You can't go skipping from Bert's house to Pip's house without G4S coming and messing around with your box. And the tag will go off if you're out of the house after 7 p.m., so you wouldn't have been able to do the panto. which might have been a blessing for Pip, and he definitely wouldn't be able to drive down to Brighton in the middle of the night. As for community service, yes, they do it at weekends. If you have a full-time job, you have to do your community service on a Saturday or a Sunday, but it would have to be every week unless you have a doctor's note. A note from your girlfriend saying he's got a hangover because of all the illegal gin he's been distilling does not cut it. But if you are a useless layabout like Toby, you'd be made to do it 4 days a week unless you could prove that would be detrimental to your career. And clearly Toby wouldn't know a career if it slapped him in the face, though I wish one would. Someone needs to. Well, that's all from me. Thank you for your podcast. I don't use iTunes, but if I did, you'd get 5 stars from me. Love and hugs, Melanie. We love you, Melanie. Thank you.
Oh, Melanie, can I just say, right, that you actually don't need to use iTunes to write a review. It's a properly held fallacy that you need to A, have some kind of Apple device, and B, use iTunes. You can just go and set up an iTunes account from any internet-enabled device and then just go write us a 5-star review. Just saying.
Just saying. Yes, and that's it.
Awesome. All right, let's come back to others.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Side of me talking about Friday 15 with a touch of Millie Bell. And then after that, we'll proceed with some tweets of the week. In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
awesome. Yeah. For me, I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that for me, it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together.
Catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice. Nah.
G'day everyone. I've had a fantastic week down in South Gippsland, Waratah Bay, beautiful little beach with some great company and some great waves. I don't surf, but there certainly were surfers out there. That was the good news. Bad news was we had absolutely no network. So every other day I would walk about 2Ks down the beach to see if I could get some, a one bar. And if I was lucky, I could download the Archers and maybe post something up on our Facebook forum. So I'm sorry if you didn't get quite the prompting that you would hope for, but we did our best in very strange circumstances. It was nice to have no technology just for a week though. On our Dumpty Dum forum page, Fiona Powell started a discussion about Tom called Oh Tom. Tom. Royfield Brown asked whether Justin Elliott is Shakespearean. Mike Hatton pointed out to us that the first Right You Are of the year was on January the 8th. Good spotting there, Mike. And Ali 1904 talked about the spectrum of coercive behaviour in the Archers. On our Facebook page, we did manage to have a bit of a discussion, even though I was basically off grid most of the time. Should Helen have a conversation with Rob when he is not supposed to have contact with her? And most people just said no. His decision not to contest the divorce is unlikely to be altruistic, and it appears he's using the leverage he has here to manipulate her again, says Janice Pope. Whilst his past behaviour was not her responsibility, she would benefit to recognise that she needs to maintain very clear boundaries with him and deal with all matters relating to him according to the legal guidelines. While she wants to save some money and hassle during the divorce process, she will emerge stronger if she does it this way. As well as set an example for the children, by accepting his gift, she has set a precedent now for the future and won't stop pushing. And it was interesting, Janice, I absolutely agree with you. There's a lot more in that vein, so please go to that thread if you're interested. I think that Helen was trying to prove to herself that she's strong and she can cope with him. But I think from... So she was using her hub. She needed to use her head there. I thought that was a... not a good decision myself, so I agreed with you. Was Roy a coward or a hero with Tracy, we wondered. Liz Villalobos, he has moments of seeming quite rational and calm. I'm always shocked. And Laura Jo Elzinger said, yep, coward. Andrew Horn saving himself for his ultimate prize. Kirsty, ooh, bit of premonition there. Pete Ranson, that remains to be seen. Many more in that vein. We then asked whether there was going to, we thought this was the start of the rapprochement between Jill and Toby with the falling off the table incident. And Terry Gardner says, nah, Jill will continue to be an anti. Everyone else will be pro, lulled into a false sense that Toby is good. And it'll all come undone when we find out about Brighton. Well, as some of us have already said, we're already bored with Brighton, so let's hope it doesn't come to that. Janice Pope also said, not really related, but did anyone else think Jill sounded like E.T. when she was trying to take the cards down? That said, if it was E.T. who took a little tumble, I would have a lot more sympathy. I thought that was so funny. And Sarah Passingham said, I'm reminded of other universally disliked new characters. The Archers has history in slowly bringing out the good so that the community changes its mind. Not Titchy Knob Natch, but remember how Linda was first received? Actually, I do think that. You're quite right, Sarah. So, yes, we still need to be kind. And they do seem to give them personality changes, don't they? So maybe he's going to get a change. We also talked about the fact that it was the week of the strong women with Jill, Miranda, Pitt, Lillian, Kirsty, and we asked the Ambridge Mouse to look out. Barb Danielson said, I like your idea of Kirsty spurning Tom and Roy and raising this child on her own. If anyone can do it, Kirsty can. Ruby Nation, I agree, it takes a village to raise a child. On second thoughts, though, and you can consider for yourself what she might have been going to say there. And Jo Jackson Pip, she's about to realise that she needs her £5,000 back. So despite the fact that I wasn't really around to prompt you, you did really well, guys. I am back now into tech land. And so let's keep the conversation going. Don't forget we have our forum on Dumpty Dum. We have our Facebook page. We also have Traktor on the Dumpty Dum website. So let's get on there and make it worth Royfield's while having paid for the protection. So until next week, hooroo.
Millie Bell, as always, that was tip-top in Bristol fashion. Juicy Loose.
Yeah.
Why don't you speed through some tweets? Because do you remember, like about 3 odd months ago, we said we were going to have, yes, like, tight shows? Yes.
Yes. But I've got some edits to suggest to this so I can get Nick Chud.
All right, go.
Ben Johnson, who is my other favourite caller in Aurora. Ruth's note to self, put the cards on the roof next year. Bubbles said, this is the Rob and Stefan. Mm-hmm. Rob, what is this business you want to invest in? Stefan, as it happens, it is an Ambridge startup, a distiller of gin. Iolanthi Rosa said, had Brian saying, I don't want to sound callous, but I am callous. Yes, that's very good. Ian, Ruther Ian, said, had Roy saying, when Kate was pregnant with Phoebe, I'd wonder how simple it'd be. Go on. No, that's it, Kirsty. Alison Nazilla, if Lily is planning a ball at Lower Loxty, they'll need to book Torn Scrotum if they're free. I think Torn Scrotum get very booked up. Packed schedule. And tweet of the week, John Kavanagh. When Brian had persuaded Jenny to be on his side about the land grab, he had Jenny saying, I can't remember the last time I saw you so excited, Brian. Probably when you started shagging that Irish bint. when Jenny said to Brian, I can't remember the last time I saw you so excited, Twitter went nuts then. It really made me laugh because everyone went, ha ha! Yeah! You know, it was such a shoo-in. To finish this sentence in the most rude way possible.
Oh, that's it. Are you done? Right, I've just got a little bit of an addendum to our general goings on. Remember those map people?
Yeah.
Right. They emailed us and apologised. They basically said, crumbs, they hadn't seen that on December the 13th we'd actually messaged them with the winners of the addresses.
Oh, they not sent them?
No, so they hadn't sent them. So Andrew Horn, Robert Dwyer Joyce and Glenn Fullerlove, your maps are now in the post. Not our fault. We did send them off to Marvelous Maps. Marvelous Maps have said, oh my God, we're so sorry we didn't see this. But basically said they are getting dispatched here. So sorry you didn't get them for Christmas, but at least naughty
mappy people.
Yeah. So sorry about that, gentlemen.
Oops.
Right, now, should we just crack on with doing our bits and pieces at the end, Juicy Loose?
Yes.
All right, smashing. Dumdydum.com, it's up. It's still up. We've got a shop there. Got a tractor.
I like the way we have to add in the thing. We haven't come down this week.
Well, now I'm getting a whole plethora of stats about uptime and threats blocked and all sorts. And I tell you what, I'll be threatening them if it ever goes down again, I'll tell you. And I know there are a couple of listeners who have emailed me to say they can actually help with stuff. I'm going to, I will get back to you. So just bear with me, but it'll be next week. So dumdum.com, go there, got a shop, said all of that. Tractor. I keep on saying every week that not only do you need to pin yourself to Tractor folks, but we'll talk about our clusters. Maybe that'll be next week. Be warned, if you're clustering, I'm going to be pointing the finger at you. Very soon and saying, why don't you organise a get-together like the lovely people up in Newcastle did, because they had oodles of fun. Now, our little show is something that Lucy and I do for love, but we do need help and assistance every now and then, and there are a couple of ways in which you can help and assist us. Firstly, you can do this by hitting the donate button, which is on our website, which is up, folks, it is up, or you can go onto patreon.com. And a special thank you to all the new patrons that are coming through at the moment. Why don't you read out the next bit, Lucy?
Is it about the academic archers?
It is.
Okay. The academic archers, I don't know what to call it, symposium, is on between the 17th and the 19th of February at the University of Lincoln. And it's excellent, a lot of fun, and you'll meet a lot of archers-y type people, which is always a bonus.
Mm-hmm. as well as listening to Lucy and I and the various caller inners.
Oh, hang on. How do people find out? Who do people contact?
Oh, you know what? If you type in Academy of Archers onto the great
Freya thing. Jarman knows about it, doesn't she?
But if you just kind of Google it, it kind of comes up. They do have a page on Facebook, but I know not everybody on the planet is actually on Facebook. So just type in Academic Archers into Google. That's what I did to actually get the dates for this today. And it comes up because the internet works like that. Now, folks, we need you to help us to create this show. And to do that, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe. You can go and SpeakPipe is on our website. It's a little red kind of tabby buttony thing over on the right hand side. Or you can call us from a telephone on 0203-031-3105 to leave us a message. That way you can get on the phone and you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Though we prefer that calls are kind of about the Archers. Archers related.
leading
with the Archers at the very least. Before then you go off into a rambling sprawl about whatever. About, you know, Theresa May and hard Brexit or something or other. You know, link it to the Archers first before you go into your polemic. And then you'll probably end up by getting on the show. On social media, specifically Twitter, you can find us where we're at DumDeeDum. Me, I'm at Roy Field. Harriet, the woman of 1001 Archers Voices, you can find her on Shambridges.
And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
On the Book of Face, where we now officially, absolutely, by the last count, have over 1,500 like lurkers. You can find us by simply typing in DumDeeDum. And much fun and hilarity is had on there. Around that Facebook page. Juicy Loose.
Yes.
Any end comments?
No.
Did you listen to King George III singing in Hamilton at the end of the podcast last week?
No.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Sorry.
A lovely listener.
Oh, I've done a thing for you. Oh, sorry. You carry on about the lovely listener.
A lovely listener did say on the Twitters that her two favourite things had collided last week.
And lovely... Oh, yes, I saw that. Yeah.
DumDeeDum and Hamilton. And but no, King George III, it's a lovely kind of very clever song. And where he talks about what it takes to lead and, you know, you'll miss me when I've gone type of thing, blah, 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 blah. And I thought as a fitting way to end, you know, our podcast. But of course, that was lost on you because after your monologue, you just switch off, don't you? Right. No, let's listen to me.
I didn't listen. I don't. No, I don't listen to my own monologue.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. No, I just want to listen to my delivery.
Oh, I don't. Listen, though.
Go on.
I had to write a quiz for BBC Radio 4 mm-hmm. about the inauguration.
Yeah.
Of Donald Flump and.
Trump.
Flump, I prefer, and he and it's a quiz about lots of trivia about inaugurations throughout history. So you should do it because you'll get it all right.
No, I won't. I don't know an awful lot about inaugurations at all.
I don't. You?
No.
Do you know what I found out? I'll give away the last.
Go on.
Thing. Every inauguration, they get a local school orchestra that plays. To accompany the inauguration, and guess how many will be playing at Trump's inauguration?
I have no idea.
None, because no schools volunteered.
Oh wow!
Yep. If that's not a damning indictment, I don't know what is. If a school doesn't want to be on national television,
you know what though? Though I forget exactly what the figures were. But the figures in terms of the, because obviously the inauguration happens in Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. is overwhelmingly Democratic.
Yeah.
It's so skewed demographic as to be preposterous. Yeah. You'd almost think it's like Soviet-style election results that viewed from that prism.
There are two Republicans in Washington.
Yeah. You know,
and they know each other. Yeah.
Well, that's like Trump and his vice president. But you know, when viewed that way, it's you could argue that it's no surprise that the school system in DC, which is a kind of blighted kind of school system, is going to be absolutely against this right-wing populist. However, they've always turned up to all the other Republican presidents that have been inaugurated at the same time. So you can argue one of two ways. But yeah.
It's, George Bush Sr. has been taken to hospital.
Oh, crumbs.
Oh, imagine if he dies on Inauguration Day. That would not...
It does...
Not that I'm willing the poor chap dead, obviously. I'm just thinking...
Absolutely not.
He'd be so cross if it took the focus off him.
How old is he? About 92?
I don't know.
Yeah, he's pretty... Why don't you just Google that while I just waffle on for a bit? But he is kind of the last link between American presidents and the Second World War, in that he served, and I believe he was a pilot, but he was absolutely decorated. And even though he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, I suppose our equivalent would be, you know, a One Nation Tory. I know I bang on about them all the time, that I don't have problems with One Nation Tories. But, you know, in hindsight, you look in the rear view mirror of history, he was somebody who absolutely did believe that he was serving all Americans, and was absolutely a statesman, and was very careful with the language that he used, not to be exclusive. And you just put somebody like him, who absolutely has served his country in a military capacity, up against somebody like Trump, who absolutely was a draft dodger.
He's 92.
That was right. He was 92. Yeah. Yeah, good bloke, yeah. George W. Bush. And people always forget that he went up against Reagan in the 1980 election, and everybody thought he was going to win, that, you know, Reagan was this kind of outsider candidate. And it's very, very, very interesting. There's a clip on YouTube, which people should listen to if they have a mild interest in American politics. Type of the 1980 US presidential election, immigration. It's a debate, TV debate, with Bush and Reagan talking about immigration. And the language used is just unrecognisable, let alone the fact they're actually Republicans. But even Reagan is saying, well, if somebody wants to come here, we should let them come, because, you know, immigrants work hard. We need immigrants to help build the country. All countries need a good, healthy level of immigration, you know, and we should let people have a pathway to citizenship. You know, you listen to somebody like Trump, who doesn't actually intone too much of Reagan, but definitely the Republican Party. It says, we're the heirs of Reagan, and Reagan was the best thing since sliced bread. He's the best president since Lincoln, etc., etc. And you realise how that party has had this massive rightward lurch, even after Reagan. Because, you listen to words that came out of Reagan's mouth then, talking about immigration, and they would say he was a lily-livered liberal right now.
Right.
But it was Ronald Reagan with a debate with George W.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Bush, and they agreed. They were not arguing that immigration was anything other than a positive thing. You know, it's quite amazing. Anyway, I'm going to say goodbye.
Okay. Goodbye.